Hello everyone, my name is Miloš Brzić and I'm Portfolio Manager here at Statera Asset Management.
Today we are going to have a candid discussion with Mark Mowry, our Chief Investment Officer. While chatting about our commentaries and future podcasts, I found myself asking Mark a lot of questions about prior global and domestic financial crises. Mark has experienced many of these crises, so we decided to share some of his insights with our listeners. Mark, could you please share with us some of your past experiences?
Thanks, Milo. So to what we think is most important to the folks listening to this podcast is why we invest the way we do. And I'm, well, let's talk a little bit about my history as an investment manager. And it said, well, it's bookended by financial crisis. Oh, and there are a few more in between. So, well, why don't we make that the topic for the conversation? So, I bought my first stock in 1987. And I know some people on the podcast who were investing back then are going to chuckle a little bit because 1987, of course, was Black Monday, the worst day, single day in stock market history happened later that year. I only owned one stock at the time, which is why I learned my first lesson when it comes to investing, you just don't have all your eggs in one basket.
What a way to start, right?
Yeah, exactly. So great lesson learned right off the bat. And so many decades later, I was a financial journalist in San Francisco starting in 1999, covering technology stocks at what then was the industry standard magazine, which at its height was a several hundred page long book of ads with very good but hard to find stories inside. And of course, we know how the technology stock bubble ended. That ended in, 2000-2001 timeframe. A few years later, I was asked to come down to join a value-oriented investment shop here in Southern California. That was 2004. And of course, several years later, beginning in 2007 and then getting worsening in 2008 and 2009, was the great financial crisis, the Great Recession. And so we persevered through that as a firm. And then here, a little less than a decade later, I joined Signature Resources Capital Management in 2016. And then, 3 years later, a little bit more than 3 years later, after joining this firm, we had yet another crisis, this one prompted by the COVID-19 pandemic crisis. So that's it. Started with the crash of 1987. We saw the technology bubble crisis, saw the great financial crisis, and now we have the pandemic of 2020.
It sounds, Mark, you got a flavor of a little bit of everything through your investment career. One question that I actually asked you personally maybe a month ago or so is, if you can tell me, what is it that you see that is different or maybe even the same when we talk about this crisis compared to the other ones?
Sure. So about this crisis, or all the crises, is that they were each very unique in their own way. And that's sort of definitional to a crisis, because what often makes something a crisis is the fact that you weren't expecting it. You weren't expecting the mechanisms by which the crisis unfolded, the reaction, the market reaction, the societal reaction, the macroeconomic reaction to the crisis that unfolded. Oh, they're always different. If we look back at the technology stock bubble, that's the hint of what made that one different. The name we give it is that it was reasonably narrow in context. That is, the bubble existed in a very, much smaller set of stocks within the broader investment universe. And that's important because while, you might have lost a lot of money had you been heavily invested in technology stocks back then, but there were many parts of the market, aspects of the market, segments of the market that did reasonably well, not only during the crisis itself, but certainly soon thereafter. And so what really defined the technology bubble was its narrowness in a way, but not its visibility. Of course, it was very, very visible. And then, of course, you had it kind of merged with the 9/11 events here in the States, which, and of course, we had the subsequent recession, which created its own market-oriented crisis, macroeconomic crisis. But when you look at the technology stock investment bubble on its own, from a market standpoint, that was reasonably narrow. And I focus on that aspect of the technology bubble because when you look at the great financial crisis, the great recession of 2007, 2008, that was very, very broad. right? The bubble, as it were, with respect to the financial crisis was leverage, in particular leverage within the domestic and even global housing market. And then on top of that, the leverage that was layered upon leverage. So the layers of leverage upon the same thing, where we thought we had, we were diversified in terms of risk, but actually, you know, many people ended up owning the same thing, or many people ended up insuring the same thing, such that when those dominoes began to fall, the whole mess of them fell at once. And that was really quite unexpected. And so again, differentiating from the technology stock bubble, the great financial crisis was very widespread in its impact, both from a macroeconomic standpoint, from a societal standpoint, and from a market reaction standpoint. Now, it's obvious that COVID is very similar. So the crisis that we're entering now is very similar in the widespreadness, if that's a word, of its impact and the nature of how it's, we feel it everywhere across the world, and we feel it in every kind of aspect of our life, not just in our investment lives or our financial lives, but also in our personal lives. So the differentiation there is kind of twofold from the other ones. Is first off, COVID had nothing to do with anything financial. No valuations, no market aspects, there's no economic aspects. It was a virus. So it's this exogenous force that basically stopped the global economy, created an enormous amount of short and still ongoing uncertainty, which saw a pretty immediate and disastrous reaction from the market. The difference here, of course, is this isn't something that's, again, we had encountered before in modern times. Of course, we had the Spanish flu and many other pandemics, but in modern times, given globalization, hadn't experienced in the same ways in the past, and it was a purely exogenous force, or something outside of the economy and outside of markets that impacted and kind of created the market crisis. And so, you know, that made it very different from an investment standpoint, because it wasn't, you know, even for the financial crisis, it wasn't so obvious the path out, but it was much clearer than this time around, right? It's how we were going to emerge from the from this particular crisis that we're still in, by the way, as you all will know, and what that means for investment.
Thanks, Mark. Can you tell us, what did you learn from the past crisis?
Yeah, the great lesson of the crash in 1987 was don't own one stock, don't own a few stocks. Diversification is your friend, right? So don't be so concentrated in your portfolio that if that one particular investment goes south, wherever you thought you were going to be is not where you're going to end up being. That same kind of lesson you could take from the great technology bubble. The reason we call it technology bubble, two aspects of it. The first one being technology. Again, it was, as I mentioned earlier, a reasonably narrow crisis among a relatively, now they were from a market capitalization to the size of the company standpoint, very huge. But if you had your portfolio very heavily invested solely or mostly in technology stocks, you very likely perform much worse than if you had just owned the broader market at the time, right? So here you have another lesson when it comes to diversification. But, you know, many people thought, well, if I own a bunch of technology stocks, I'll still be okay. The problem was you owned a bunch of technology stocks, but they had all the same features in a lot of ways, right? There were a lot of the same factors driving interest in all of them. So you might have thought you owned different things, but you didn't really own different things. And there's a second, perhaps even more fundamental lesson that was learned during the technology stock bubble, which is that the price at which you're buying these stocks matters, right? So we know that stocks are meant to be representative of all the income that they're going to generate over the course of their life, which in many cases is considered to be forever. And so the more you pay now for those earnings in the future, the less your return on that stock likely should be. So you can think that the technology stock, the reason it became a bubble is because investors, by bidding up the shares in those stocks, were buying out further and further, not only further and further out in the future, but higher and higher expectations for the future. And what ends up happening is those expectations turned out to be not very accurate, very wrong, and wrong on the high side. And so the bubble burst because people were paying too much for a future that was very unlikely to happen. But the other important lesson is there were many parts of the market, pockets of the stock market that did very well during those years. And they were, compared to those technology stocks, very undervalued, less expensive stocks. So stocks that when one considers the future earnings and dividends and everything, you know, that they would generate over time, looked relatively less expensive. Well, those stocks tended to do very reasonably well during that time frame, and certainly over the next few years. So the lesson there is, wrapping the two of those together, was one, be diversified, but two, have a very pay close attention to how much you're paying for those stocks. Like, what's the price of those stocks? And by that, I don't mean Apple trades at $100 a share. How much am I paying for the earnings that I expect that company to generate over its life? We like stocks to have prices that are low based on those metrics because we're not paying a lot for what we think we're getting. And that's an important lesson to take from that. You know, I think it's among the best examples of where value orientation can serve one well over longer periods of time. So turning towards the great financial crisis, I think one of the most important aspects there, at the time I happened to be with an investment management firm that only focused on equities. But the key takeaway there was, there are clients that may not always have the sort of tolerance for market volatility, especially as they age, for example, right? Most clients don't want, I think going back to the all their eggs in one basket kind of metaphor, maybe they don't want to have 100% of their investments in equities or in stocks because stocks tend to be reasonably volatile. So what are the other options? Well, the first thing we're going to point to is fixed income or bonds. One of the key lessons I learned coming in the financial crisis is having the ability to offer clients investment solutions that don't exclusively include stocks. Many clients are going to want to have investments that, again, aren't solely inside stocks, which tend to be really volatile, in particular around crisis times. And so that was a key lesson from an investment standpoint, as an investment manager, which is, you know, maybe you want to have solutions that are broader, that are multi-asset class based, so that you can offer someone a portfolio that has varying mixes of stocks and bonds in them, one of which or multiple of which might be better suited to their particular aspects of their longer term financial plan, especially as it evolves over time. And then finally, this last one is, you know, having been, and this is interesting, it's tying it all together, like I've been through those three crises and a few other smaller ones through the years. When you look at the way the investment industry tends to talk about investments, they tend to focus on what, Milos? You know, the one thing that most folks will focus on when it comes to investing.
Return.
Exactly. What don't they focus on?
Risk, right? Aligning the risk with proper expectations.
Exactly. As an investment manager, I think it's every bit as important, perhaps sometimes more important. And this was kind of proved true as this crisis started and as we move through it. Have really honest and frank discussions, you know, this from an investment manager standpoint, have very frank and honest discussions about the potential for market risk. And as a client, as an investor, understand where there's risk in your portfolio and what that looks like. It was important for us, you know, wrapping together everything that we learned about crises before it, to help clients understand what risk might look like before it actually happens, so that when it does, they have an understanding that it's likely to have occurred. Two, they have already thought about how they might react to it. Now, you can never get that exactly right in advance, but to the extent that you've talked about it beforehand and you let people get accustomed to it from an idea standpoint, when it actually happens, it's not so unfamiliar and maybe it's not so scary. And so that's, you know, this crisis represents sort of pulling all of that together, what we learned in the past. I think that perhaps the most important lesson is that one, which is sort of one has to be very clear on, as we expect increasing levels of return, we must also expect increasing levels of risk. It's just, you know, the same two sides of the same coin, right? And that's critical to how a critical lesson from all crises, but I think it, especially after the great financial crisis, the Great Recession, and this COVID crisis, we see that message often talked about more and more. We talk about risk more and more and more. Return will be what it'll be, but understand that risk is going to dominate your experience as an investor sometimes, in particular, if we, you know, over the past 15 to 20 years.
So, Mark, could you tell us more about how prior crises informed your approach to investment management?
Love to, because of course that's, you know, the meat of the discussion, the reason for having a chat like this. Looking back at the first two crises, again, diversification is the easy one, right? I think most people now have forgotten the idea that they don't, well, as we always return to this, as we see folks loading up on Tesla or or you know, Amazon even Apple, right? And Microsoft. Right, exactly. You see folks loading up in individual stocks, they love the stories. Well, that's not diversification. So we feel like we often learn the lesson of diversification, and then the world falls in love with particular stories and portfolios may become less diversified. So diversification always and invariably will be important, whether you're talking about stocks or you're talking about bonds or you're talking about other asset classes, right? Diversification is among the most important things you can incorporate into a portfolio. And so the hope is that over time, your winners win more than your losers lose. And that exists both on the equity side and the fixed income side. And the only way to benefit from that sort of approach is through diversification. And we never think that too much is, you know, there's too much in there. So diversification being a foundation. Secondarily, as expectations are higher, you're going to get more risk, right? And this too exists on the equity side and the fixed income side. So we know as our expectations for those stocks become more aggressive, the risk is going to likely be more aggressive there too. Same thing on the fixed income side. So if we're chasing yield, if we're buying high yield bonds for their incremental yield, there's a reason they're called junk. The likelihood of default among those companies is higher, right? Your risk is higher. So with incremental return expectations must come incremental risk. So even as we're diversifying, we have to understand that risk must be an important component in the measure. And then pulling that together from the client experience standpoint, do as much as we can as an investment manager to help the client understand in advance, sure, what their return expectations should be. And once you've sort of gotten given the sense of what history looks like from various asset classes, also help them understand what risk looks like so that they're not necessarily surprised when markets do what they do, to become more volatile on occasion, right? When our expectations, the market doesn't agree with our expectations over near and the medium term. But we know that's part and parcel to investing. The reason we expect a return is because there's risk there. But with sufficiently long time horizon, generally speaking, the outcome looks more like our original return expectations than it does our original risk expectations, right? And we wrap all that together. And on top of that, I don't want to forget about it, but I wanted to mention it last is, you know, not only talk about diversification, you talk about risk, you want to talk about also the price at which you're buying things and what types of things you're buying in a portfolio and the defensibility of the decisions that you make for a portfolio. We're a manager that focuses on the history of markets as a way to inform and define the decisions we make for portfolios. And we'll contrast that pretty starkly, we think, with folks who look to the future and use prognostication to tell where we're going to, you know, make decisions for the portfolio. We'd rather use the firmness and definitiveness of the past as a guide rather than opinion about the future as a guide, because we know that the, you know, basing our decisions on the past is far more defensible. And what we see over time is that the outcomes are more like what we thought would happen when we made those decisions in the first place, right? Whereas when we base an investment manager on opinions, the outcome is rather chaotic, and the likelihood that the outcome is going to look like what we thought it was going to be is much less, right? Because we weren't using expectations, you know, looking at history and setting proper expectations from that. And so we wrapped all of that together in a package for clients. And what we believe to be ultimately, you know, the objective is to make it comfortable with the client regardless of what the market's doing. You know, when markets are doing well, they're like, great, that's awesome. When markets are not doing well, we get that sort of, I know we've talked about this. It doesn't mean it's going to be comfortable in the near term, right? In the short term. But when we focus on the long-term plans for clients, you know, ultimately periods, even like this one, tend to be a little more comfortable to weather as investment managers and as clients, because we had those expectations in advance. And ultimately that's our goal, making sure the clients stay invested at a level that may not only target their long-term plans, but allows them to be comfortable on the path of the way to get there.
Thanks, Mark. If I may add to your comment, I joined the firm about 4 years ago, and during this time, we haven't really had any major market interruptions. As we currently are experiencing an ongoing ebb and flow in the market, I feel that one key takeaway would be ensuring that investor expectations are set properly, meaning that investor understands their willingness and ability to accept risk, regardless of the current state of the market, as well as fully understanding the potential upside and downside of the risk they're incurring. And I feel that now, more than ever, this remains true. In times of crisis, many might feel that they need to make major changes and move away from their game plan that was originally agreed upon. While, of course, some adjustments and revelations will need to take place, it is crucial to remain in constant communication and make decisions that align with the overall investment goals. As a former athlete, I related in this way. When you're heading into your championship game, you don't suddenly change your entire game strategy due to extra pressure or expectations. Instead, you make adjustments that align with your specific opponent, if necessary, and continue to communicate with your teammates and coach. But you keep to your core approach that has seen you this far. In our case, at SRCM, our goal as a coach and partner is to continue communicating and offering suitable investment solutions that align with our investors' goals. In my opinion, this is one of the most important things I have witnessed and experienced through the COVID-19 pandemic and related economic interruptions. Thank you, Mark, for sharing your experiences and expertise across these topics, especially at a time when it's so crucial for investors to understand their options and stay on the right track during a difficult, uncertain, and unprecedented time. And thank you all who joined us today. We hope you enjoyed this candid conversation and will join us next time.
Importantly, this commentary is not presented as an investment recommendation. The approach described may not be right for everyone. No one listening should take our comments as advice specific to or appropriate for their individual situation. Individual circumstances should be taken into consideration when determining a suitable investment approach. All investing carries risk.